Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome all to another episode of the Knife Talk podcast. This is where we talk knives. We help you work through your dilemmas and troubleshoot some issues you might have going on in your life or in the shop. More than anything, we're here to just kind of keep you company during your commute or while you're hand sanding away. And we like to kick it off. Well, actually, I just realized my name is Marco Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. I'm here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives and Craig Lockwood of Who Knows What Knives. And yeah, we're going to kick it off by catching up on the last week. Jeff, how's the last week been for you, man?
I'm fucking tired. I'm so tired. The last week and a half have been brutal. And it's my own fault. And today especially... I just finished. I had a friend of mine who's got a restaurant, and he is in need of handrails before the building inspector comes. So I said, "I'm with you. I'll totally help you." I talked to him last week, and he's just like, "I'm going to need, you know, when I put the posts up, can you come down and make these railings?" I said, "Yeah, just give me some notice." And called me up yesterday, and he says, "All right, they're up. I need your railings. I need your railings now." So I had to run down. We had to find pipe and steel, and I take measurements. My shop is not built for – my shop is not laid out to be a fabrication shop, which – so everything's a wreck. And I knocked out four handrails with a bend and capping the rails and all this stuff between yesterday afternoon and today. And I just – I swear to God, I am feeling all 50 years. I'm feeling the bending over to pick stuff up, and then the MIG welder's not working right and – this. And then on top of that, my landlord — I talked to Craig a while ago about this — but my landlord is going to Burning Man, and he asked me to build this platform that it hooks up to the trailer hitch of his Jeep. So I built this platform, and now it's getting shipped out to Burning Man tomorrow, but it's been in the shop for the last 2 days, and I'm waiting for the last fitting of these things. And it's just everything other than knives has been like this real pressure cooker, and I'm just dead. I'm dead. Nice. Totally dead.
Laying a lot of pipe, sounds like.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say that.
What's the liability issues potentially with building some fakakta trailer that's going to be at Burning Man with a bunch of ding-dongs climbing across
it? What's the liability? None. I have nothing to do with it. What do you mean a liability?
You built it, didn't you?
This is, yeah, but I mean, it's not like I have this is for a couple people to stand on the back, and they go 5 miles an hour. This is an art car for Burning Man. The liability is like, I told him, I'm like, with the amount of time I have and then my engineering degree, I mean, it's safe as shit. I had him and his kid on it, and they were bouncing around on it. We got to do a couple more brackets to the bumper, but it'll be fine. I'm not too worried about it. But the liability is like, don't fucking knock somebody off of it. You know,
famous last words. It's safe as shit. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine. He's the one. He's like, don't worry. It'll be fine. And I'm like, all right, I'm with you. But I honestly overbuilt it for sure. Like, it is completely overbuilt. It's funny. It's funny. And actually, I put it on my own Jeep, and I jumped around on it. And it was pretty good. But, the trailer hitches and the sockets aren't really, there's a lot of slop. So I have to build some things to, attach to the steel bumper on this thing. And it's fine. And then,
Jeff, can you hear me? Fuck.
Do we have to start all over or?
Oh, I'm so tired. I mean, Jeff just said he's tired, but I was up at 2:30 this morning for a flight.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so I'm back in France now, but it's just been a longest day, and it's hot as hell here as well. It's like, oh, I'm not prepared for it.
Yeah, I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning, but yeah, you've got quite a few hours on me.
Yes, and I'm not an early bird at all, normally. No, so
I'm
yeah,
not either.
I'm dying, absolutely dying, but... It is right. It's just a message. Give me a sec.
Sure.
I'm not sure what's happened, but I've noticed with Jeff's stuff lately, his other podcast as well, there's just been loads of drift in the audio. So I don't know whether he's bogged down his computer or something. I don't know. Yes, we'll see now.
Will we need a new link and everything, or can we just come back into the session?
I think if he just comes back in on the link, should be good. Okay. Yeah. If not, I'll just quickly set up another one now. But cool. Yeah, we should be. I think we'll be good. I think we'll be good. How are you anyway? Good?
Yeah, doing good.
Good stuff. How does it feel being back now after all that traveling you've done?
Good. I'm getting ready to travel again on tomorrow.
Really? Oh, geez. Yeah. Where are you off?
I'm headed off to Minnesota for 5 days.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Jeez, you've done a lot this year, haven't you?
It's a lot. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
It's all been good stuff. It's as I'm sure you're very familiar with now, it's just a lot of back and forth and asses and planes and
yes.
Uncomfortable seats and it's exhausting. It's shockingly exhausting.
The excitement of getting up to go on a plane that waned years ago for me, and now I'm just like, oh, I got to get on a plane.
Yeah, next year I think it's going to be maybe one or two things a quarter.
Yeah,
maybe.
There you go. Yeah, I can see your signal's much better now as well. I don't know what it was. We could barely hear you. You're cutting out. Okay. Right.
Oh.
It's fine. So we'll take off from where basically you'd said what was going on, and then Mirako said something, and I think Mirako's just going to carry on from there. 1, 2, 3.
One. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it sounds like you're staying busy, but it does sound exhausting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got you. I'm doing good. I had a couple knives that have been in the shop actually for a bit longer than I would have liked them to normally have been, but I've also been, it was like they showed up just before Blade Show, and I was building stuff for Blade Show, and then I went to Blade Show, and then right after Blade Show, I went to Ireland and Italy, and now I just got back and finished spa-ing those guys up in between of everything else that was going on. And so they're looking gorgeous and ready to send back out. But I think I need to change the way my policy on this stuff. I think I need to change it to where, like, I'm happy to sharpen the knife and maybe just, like, just the blade finish, like, re-etch the knife. Because the coffee finish is very, for me at least at this point, I've gotten to a consistent point where I'm getting good results basically every time, is that it's very straightforward. But anything more than that is... I've made the mistake, I think, of taking on more than that, being like, oh, I'm going to update the grind and I'm going to make it awesome and all this shit. And it ends up being just a lot more than I had really taken into consideration, because when you regrind the blade, then you got to rehand sand the blade, and after rehand sanding the blade, you got to remark the blade, and you got to go through all that, basically like the last quarter of the finishing of my knives, and then you got to refinish the handle and all this shit, and it's just like, it's a big pain. And so I think in the future I'm happy to offer that, but that's going to be at some sort of rate rather than me just, because the guy sent the knives to me and he's like, go crazy with them, and I'm like, I think in the future I'll just be like, that means sharpening the knives and refinishing. If you want any more than that, it's going to cost, because it's just a lot of time that goes into doing all that crap.
Yeah.
Very rarely, which is the other side of it too. It's like, okay, this doesn't actually happen that often, so maybe it's not that big of a deal, but it just happens to be happening at a time where there's a lot going on and it feels very disruptive. And maybe after things slow down, I'll feel a little bit more amenable to doing this kind of stuff. But right now, I'm just like, God damn it. I just shot myself in the foot. Or I guess stabbed myself in the foot again. But other than that, I'm getting ready to go to Minneapolis. Actually, when this is airing, I'll just be finishing up a class at North Star Forge, Jason Krause's shop. He's a really good dude, and he got me set up with a cool class there. But I'm going to Minneapolis for the Midwest Knife Makers Guild Hammerin', and so I'll be demonstrating across the 2 days, kind of like I do at Maker Camp, but I'll be doing that kind of more intensely over at this event at this Hammerin', and then I follow that immediately with a class, so kind of doubling up on the trip without making it too long of a trip. But I'll be out of town again for another 5 days. I guess technically and overall like 6 days doing all this travel and teaching, but I look forward to it and meeting some more new people and sharing the word of decoding Mosaic Damascus. Other than that, yeah, things are pretty low key and yeah, feeling good.
Nice.
Question for you, going back to customer service. At what point do you think that it's worth, that it's just worth just good customer service to kind of do that stuff for on the arm? Because what I get is I get stuff to be sent back very irregularly. And if this was happening a lot, like sharpening a knife, if somebody wants me to sharpen the knife, send it back, I'll sharpen it. Often, like once in a while, a guy will throw it to the dishwasher or something like that. And generally speaking, I've found myself, and it might be because of my price point, but a lot of stuff will turn into more sales. So I try to be as generous as I can. Obviously, I'm not upgrading grinds very often, probably maybe once or twice since I've been doing this. But I mean, to me, like I get so much more value of word of mouth and customer service and people just being like, wow, that was really great customer service if I don't give them a bill. What do you think?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's definitely above and beyond what the customer had originally asked for, and I've been updating them and letting them know what changes I'm making and stuff, or think I want to make, and then before getting the thumbs up and moving forward, I do think that I'll probably end up more on the amenable side of it, and after this is all passed, so that you know, in another year or 2 years when this happens again, I'll probably be like, nah, who cares? I'll just do it, whatever. But yeah, if it becomes like a super regular thing, that's a different situation versus it being a rarity. But I do think there is the upside, the potential upside, I guess, especially since I know this person is part of like different knife communities across the universe, the worldwide web.
Wow.
You know, he's all the way over in the Andromeda galaxy talking about these knives, right? So, but I do think there is the potential benefit because he's seeing two sides of basically my evolution as a knife maker. He got these knives early on, like in the first couple of years of me making knives, and now it's been 14 years, and he's getting completely upgraded blade geometry, and they cut like a fucking dream. It's so nice. I think he's going to be psyched when he gets him back. And the likelihood of him sharing that is very high, I think. Because I even saw, I think, on one of the websites where people do their knife nerd stuff, kitchen knife nerd stuff, he posted when he originally got them. So I think they look really great. I think, honestly, like the finish even looks way better than it was the first time around, just because techniques have changed as well. So I do think it's a net positive. It's just right now I feel kind of like bitter towards it because it's been a bit of a distraction.
Of course.
But I'll probably get over that pretty quick here.
All right. Craig, how are you?
Just as tired. Yeah. So when you said you feel 50, yeah, I'm right up there with you. I was up at 2 a.m. this morning for a flight back home here to France. And just really feeling it. Really feeling it. It's a really heavy weekend. We played at a festival and it was, camped for 2 nights. And it was, as much beer as you could drink kind of thing, So, yikes. It was quite heavy, quite heavy. And so I had a day to recover, 2 days to recover back in the UK before coming home. But yeah, up at 2 a.m. for a flight. Got here, it is super, super hot. And I just need bed. I just need bed, when your eyes are aching and that kind of thing.
You need a soak is what you need.
You're right. I do. But here I am.
Soap up them toes.
yeah. But no, it's all good. It's all good, actually. Back here in France. It's a bank holiday tomorrow. So that means basically everything is shut. A forced rest for everybody tomorrow, really. Kids are obviously still off school. We're just going to, chill out at home with the kids. The weather's good. Picking plums from all the trees in the garden we've got. So that's what I've been doing for a lot of today. Jeez. We've got just tons and literally tons of plums to be picked before they turn. So, yes, we started that today when I got home. So, yeah, a bit more of that tomorrow.
Are you going to make some wine? What do you do with all those plums?
No, I'm not sure. I think we're just going to make like jams and things like that, think. It just needs to be done before they all go off, basically, but they all turn. That's it. But I'm glad you came to me last because I've got questions for you. Real, real questions. So at the beginning of the show, Mareka wasn't being rude when he said, and Craig from whoever company he's with. He wasn't being rude. That's just carrying on from a conversation that we had on earlier in the week. So I've had a lot of time to think about, chop knives going forward and all the rest of it. So little buddy, my little one, starts school now in September. So I'm back on the grinder. I'm back to work after a long, long time. During this time, I've lost access to my Instagram for Chop. Changed a phone, had two-factor authentication. Then I changed all the other accounts over to like Facebook, and then all the rest of it. And it's just like I just can't get back into it. It just can't be done. So I'm thinking, is this an opportunity to rebrand? I'm thinking nothing has been put out as Chop for a long, long time. Chop as a name, I think it's a great, great name. But if you Google, for example, chop knives, I mean, chop is it's a verb of what you do with a knife. So it's quite hard to be recognized as a brand, if you know what I mean, because, how do you chop with a knife, for example, is always going to be right at the top. I'm just in two minds, and I'm really sort of torn. And it was interesting speaking to you both in the week, how you both had different answers. Maybe we could chat about that for a little bit. What would you do if you were me? Give or take the odd knife, it's probably been about 2 years since I've, seriously been, it's been a full-time job, So I feel as if I've been really out of the loop a bit as well. So it's going to take a bit of time just to get myself back up to speed and so on. And I'm just wondering whether that needs to be as Chop or as something new.
What do you think, Jeff?
Don't know.
I love the name Chop. I think it's like number one. I think as far as like a website name, I think it's unbelievably good. Mm. I think that you've established yourself with Chop, and I think that changing the whole branding just because of an Instagram name is, it's a lot of extra work for being able to, you could just do a new Instagram, but you still have Chop Knives. You still have your brand. You still have people know who you are. You still have customers. And you just need to kind of update your Instagram as opposed to, you know, I think that it's hasty to just start all over again.
Possibly.
What would you think about starting over? What would you think of, have you thought of any names that you'd think about?
Yeah, or? I mean, from a technical perspective, I've still got the domain and that kind of thing. So, you know, I could just point that domain to somewhere new. And with regards to the website, I could literally just change the logo on the website and have that pointed to the new domain. So I don't have to make the new website. I wouldn't have to do all that, you know, from a technical point of view. But I completely do see what you're saying. You know, it would maybe seem a bit weird to change the brand when there's really not a need. It's just an Instagram that I'm missing. And, you know, we've talked so much over the last few weeks how important that is, Instagram. But, you know, I do have an email list and I do have all these things. But with regards to a name, been thinking of a couple. I went on and I got the Instagram handle for a couple that I was thinking, just in case, because I'm pretty sure if I were to mention them, people might think, oh, I'll go and take that quickly. I've already been on and registered a few.
Oh.
So Rock and Roll Knives I quite like. And it sort of brings in, you know, what other things that I do as well. You know, I quite like that. Mareko did come back with another one as well, actually, which was in a similar vein, which I'm trying to find here in the messages that he was sending me, but I haven't registered that yet, so I'm not going to mention it, because some schmuck out there will do.
type it in the show feed so I can see.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it here. Oh, Mareko, if you could, do you remember what you said? I'm trying to find it. Yeah.
Oh, douchebag knives. Why would you do that?
That's not that fast of a typer.
Ball bag knives. That's you're going to call it ball bag knives. Mother's plums knives.
Mother's plums. Right, let's just wait for Mareko, see what he comes up with here. I'm torn, and I completely see your side of things there, Jeff, as well. It would make things...
Ah, yes,
he's just come up. I mean, that's a good one as well. It's a good one, too.
Well, I like the tie to knife work, too.
Yes. So basically, it's HRC are the initials, which is really
giving
nice.
Too much away. Already.
They won't get it from that. Our listeners, you kidding me?
You think they can't? That is a good name. I will say that is a good name.
Yeah, very good.
That is a good name.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm still at the point where it's like, it seems like it's a lot of like explaining to do.
Yeah.
To just like, we're now changing off to Mother's Plums knives from Top Knives, you know?
I do sort of agree, but there's also that side of like, oh, a fresh start could be quite nice, and being able to incorporate, because the idea is, I mean, I'll be 3 days a week making knives basically, so it, you know, it's not going to be, you know, putting out the numbers that you put out, it'll be just me, so it'll be, you know, a couple of knives a month. And what I loved before about when I was, you know, releasing knife, you know, the one-offs that I did, I'd always make like a video for it, and I put a lot of time into that, and I want that to be part of it, you know. So yeah, there'll be right. You know, one or two knives released a month. They'll all be completely unique, but there'll be a really cool video for each of them, and you know, that's I think what I'll be excited about. So yeah, so Mareko, what's your thought?
Yeah.
Because I know you had a different thought earlier.
Yeah, I'm on the other side. I think you're in the perfect position to pivot, and like you were already starting to say, like it's not like it would be a massive brand overhaul. It'd be kind of as simple as just changing the name on the website and the domain name. And I think it would be a very simple thing to send out to the people who are already on your email list. I think that would be the hardest group of people to explain that to. But I also, at the same time, I think it's very straightforward. I think you already have kind of incorporated the fact that you are a musician and that you make music and stuff with previous music that you were doing before the 355s. And I do think also with some sort of music oriented, brand name, that there might open up other opportunities for potential collaborations down the road with.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Rock and rollers who love to also cook. And that would also kind of not necessarily that a specific brand name would necessarily have to line up with music, but I think it flows really nicely and feels very natural. But like you're saying, Chop, like, it hasn't been very active for a couple of years, which I feel like in today's day is a really fucking long time to be kind of out of commission, in a way. And so, I don't, because it's not, it doesn't sound like it would be a lot of work to overhaul. I think it would be pretty straightforward. And I think too, it like I was already kind of saying, it represents a little bit more accurately where you're at with your life. And it makes it a place where you can not only do your knife stuff, but you can also put your music content. So you can kind of have both going on there at the same time. Without it being kind of like too disruptive as like, why the fuck is this knife maker putting all this music stuff on there? Oh, it's because he's a fucking musician and he's part of a band, and you're going to be doing like possibly some other stuff within the music industry, which I think will be really cool and could also really kind of, again, be more in line with a new brand that is still knives, but also has that musical element to it.
Hmm. See, you just made things even more difficult for me now.
All right, then I'm going to make it even more difficult. I think that when you base your business off of social media, you're not making a long distance decision.
Mm, true. Yeah.
And I think that having a long goal and having not just be based off of the fact that you haven't done anything in a couple of years. You've established yourself. What about all the people who have a Chop knife? You know? And it's like, you got good customers still, and they know who you are. You have a whole YouTube channel with all your brother stencils and all that stuff, all those videos you've done.
Oh, jeez, yes. It's like... I took that one down.
It seems as though... I mean, then when we say... you know, welcome to Knife Talk. This is Craig Lockwood from Ball Bag Knives. I mean, I don't know. Are we changing everything? It's going to take a while.
You're right. Yeah,
I just don't.
You're
I think
right.
that
You're
I.
Right.
I agree with.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with what Mareko is saying, and I think that Mareko has a extremely, extremely good pitch for why you should change it. I'm also of the mind of like be direct. You know, I'm a stay the course guy. Like, very directional, and, you know, you're doing the right thing, and, you know, Don't let the breeze blow your direction.
Yeah.
You could do all these names as like a different style of your knife. You know, true. You could have like the signature series with, you know, this is the 355 signature knife. And but unless you sell Chop knives, because it's such a good name and it's like it's to the point, it just seems like you're throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
Yeah, I mean, you both got great point. I think what I need to concentrate on is making knives. Get some knives ready and then make that call, you know. I think maybe the name isn't that important, you know. The knives are the important thing. So I think...
Also like doing this stuff. You like doing all this, creating new... having new work for you to yourself to do. You like to do all the naming and you like to do the graphics.
Yeah.
This is your
yeah,
bag.
Yeah, I do enjoy doing that.
You like to do
that.
Chinese shit.
Right, I do enjoy doing that, yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah.
I got another thought.
Go.
So what if you, and this sounds like a lot more work, possibly, but if there's some sort of like umbrella and then Chop is one series and then this new brand is another series. Because
that just seems difficult to sort of market and to explain. I think that one, doesn't it?
I love the direction that you're going in, and I love the direction of having the music be part of the experience. I just don't think I think you can have it all, you know, I without having to like completely rebrand.
Mm.
It just doesn't seem well. It seems like, I mean, you've been doing it for nine years, Chop Knives?
Yeah, ten years. Yeah.
It's like, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you know.
Well, and like he was saying too, though, that he has to start from zero again with social. Not that that's everything. Honestly, I would say there's probably more value on your email list than maybe there ever was in social.
But people know who you are, though. You're not like coming out of the, you know, who's this Craig Lockwood? I mean, people know who you are. Not that you need knife makers to know any of it anyway. Hmm. But I mean, your email list is going to be your customers.
Yeah.
So
I might just go with George Fader Knives. Oh. Fuck it.
Might as well.
But I think
Mother's Plums.
Mother's Plum. But I think that does bring up that whole thing of how important a name is maybe as well. We've sort of briefly touched on that in the past because we get questions from, and some of the names you just think, what are you thinking? You know, you know, we're not going to mention any of them, but some of them are just like, fuck me, you need to change that. I need to concentrate on the knives before I worry about what they're going to be called. I mean, I think that's the way to go. That's the move.
Mm-hmm. Look at you. Yeah. Look at you. Ball bag knives.
Ball bag knives.
I
mean, Jesus
Christ. It's like Mother's Plum is fucking good.
Well, I mean, that's better than the one that you just put in the chat, actually, which is, a little bit shit, let's face it.
Mother's Plums. Mother's Plums.
Right. Okay. So actually, I need to say that the first knife that I'm working on is my Dharma Steel Chef Invitational knife. Nice. Yeah, which I started probably 4 or 5 months ago. So it's all shaped out and it's been heat treated. So yeah, so that's what I'm going to be getting on this week. And remember Dharma Steel, the Chef Invitational, which we do every, I believe it's November. Great time with the Dharma Steel people. DharmaSteel.se. If you're looking for a Damascus style stainless steel, Dharma Steel is the one to go with. DharmaSteel.se. Remember, if you are doing the build along, I'm not sure if there's any still available, any of the blanks still available, any of the bars from Maritime Knife Supply. But you know, go and check it out there. If you are doing the build along with us, let us know. Start tagging things up. Make sure you get a decent photo and send that over to the guys at Dharma Steel. That would be really good. Let's get going with that now. Okay, then. What are we going to do? We can do questions to start with?
We got questions. We have feedback. We have tool regrets. I want to, at the end, maybe we could talk about, I want to bring back a little hot takes. I have a hot take that annoyed me recently. But it's your call.
Let's start with feedback. Let's change things up a little bit, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, feedback. Guys, if you want, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and that's where you can interact with the show. Oh, by the way, I got a nice message from the guy, STP Knife Collections, who's telling everybody for the 5th annual Louisiana Custom Knife Show in the Jambalaya Capital of the World. They're going to have September 14th and 15th in Gonzales, Louisiana. Tables and website tables and booths are available at the website lacustomknives.net. This is a show in Louisiana. And STP was so happy that we said something that they are going to do a, they're going to have an award called a Knife Talk Sponsored Award. So apparently there's going to be a culinary knife named after, named sponsored by us.
Really?
So we will be the, yeah, I guess so. That's what he wrote to me. Thank you for telling everybody about the show. So we'll, you know, win, go down there and win that Knife Talk Award and tell us all about it. First things first. Go to Knife Talk Podcast Instagram. That's where you can send us whatever you want. The first one comes from our friend Justin Modica, J-Mod Knives. We were talking last week about culinary guys who don't cook, and I got a lot of messages, and I sent to everybody, send your pictures in of all the food you're cooking, and Justin wrote, Jeff, you're right. These fuckers don't cook. We try to get people to send pictures of their custom cookware and what they cook, and we have only had one or two people send stuff in that. With that being said, here's some pics for you. He sent pics of the food he uses with the knives that he uses, and I want to make a big shout-out to Rainy Day Forge, Hobby Hawk Knives, Speedster Stoves, Donnie Dulovich, Hubris Knife Works, Joyce Cuddy, and they all sent in pictures of the food they were cutting. I haven't figured out a way to get it to you guys, but they did a nice job, and we got a miserable bowl of rice from our champion Paul Jansen. Paul Jansen sent a miserable bowl of rice, so congratulations everybody for sending in your pictures. Feel free to go to Knife Talk Podcast and send us the food that you're cooking, because the people I mention are no longer flea bags. If they send pictures of their food, they're knife makers within good standing.
They pass the test.
I wish I could see the food, because Joyce, I can't even access the Knife Talk Podcast anymore.
Well,
Instagram.
I forgot the password, so I'm going to send. We'll figure something out. We'll figure something out. Robert Pierce says, "I just finished this week's episode. My wife and I just got back from California from a PNW road trip. Oh Jesus, did I lose you? Are you there?
Oh nice.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We're here, but you're breaking up a bit. Yeah." Right, we'll carry on, and if you can change things, jump back in, and if not, you need to start prioritizing this show, okay?
Yeah, Jesus, Jeff. I mean, really.
Okay, are you back?
He's not.
No.
He's 928 milliseconds behind.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, we've lost Jeff. Some of us take this show quite seriously, such as Morocco and I, but, you know... Work with monkeys, what do you expect, eh? Hey. So I suppose we got on with questions, so we Morocco?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, before we do, what we need to do is...
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Go get it. Okay, first question has come from just Jord at Jordan. Which is a great handle, if that's really his Instagram handle. And says, what do you guys do to cryo-treat a knife that is too big or tall to fit through the neck of a Dewar? I'm looking at buying a Dewar, but it seems that they all have a 2-inch neck opening, which would be fine 95% of the time. What about a 3-inch cleaver? Is it safe just to put the knife in a steel catering pan and insulate top and bottom with thick foam? Have you guys done anything like that before? Thanks, fellas. That's a really good question, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done cryo in a Dewar or anything like that before, so I couldn't answer. Morocco, anything you've done like that?
Yeah, I've only done cryo. Well, let's see. Yeah, I haven't done cryo with a Dewar. I've only done it, which is like the dryo approach, which is using denatured alcohol with dry ice, and basically you get a gallon of denatured alcohol. Usually you can get it from your hardware store. It's used as a type of fuel for like lamps and other kind of stuff. And and so you can add dry ice to that, and it'll get down to like a negative 110, 120 degrees or so, which is pretty damn cold. It's not the same as liquid nitrogen, but it's pretty damn cold. And if you go to Dr. Laron Thomas's book, he talks about the various aspects of heat treating using cold treatment, which is, I think, a freezing versus sub-zero, which is the dry ice, and then a liquid nitrogen or, whatever. I can't remember what he calls the other one, like the super cold treatment. Yeah. Anyways, and he really goes into depth with those. He's also got that on his website, knifesteelnerds.com. I've had great results using the dry approach. And the way I've done that a few different ways. I've seen people do the dryo in like just a metal pan, just on like the deck or something like that. But the problem is that it warms up and goes through the liquid the dry ice so quickly that it's if you can figure out a way to insulate it, that's the best move. If you can do the metal pan inside of a cooler, that would probably be most ideal. And you can buy like styrofoam coolers, or even just like your cooler that you use for beer when you go camping or whatever. The potential problem with doing plastic, just going straight to the plastic, is that it's so harsh on the plastic, it can cause it to crack, and then that can
makes
cause
it brittle.
Can cause some leakage problems. So that's why putting in a pan inside of a cooler, I think, would definitely be the move. I've gotten great results, and typically you only need, I think, again, referring back to Dr. Laron Thomas's work, it's like half an hour to an hour. Even Damasteel's specs talk about doing either a freezer treatment or a sub-zero treatment, like the dry ice, liquid nitrogen, dry ice with denatured alcohol as well as the liquid nitrogen. So I think they all have a place, especially if your blade is too, either because the opening to the door can be sometimes really tight. I think he's saying his is only 2 inches wide. So if he's got a taller knife, like a Chinese cleaver, it's going to be hard to get that in there, or a butcher cleaver or whatever. But then also if it's too long, it's, you know, part of the blade's going to be sticking out. You got to figure something out. And so I think this liquid, this dryo approach, without having to spend all the money on a larger door, is a good way to get good results.
Yeah. Just think about the question a second. I may be wrong here.
Sure.
So you use cryo to get that extra bit of hardness out, you know, from a knife.
Some steels. It benefits some steels. You can put all steels through it, but it's going to benefit high alloy, high carbon steels, and stainless steels the most.
Okay. So I can see why you do that with something like a slicer or something like that. But you know, he's talking about like a cleaver. Do you generally want that as that hard? Because it's going to be more brittle, and you know what you use a cleaver for, you know, you could be hitting bone and all sorts of things.
Sure.
I'm wondering whether he's just thinking a bit too hard on that anyway.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's the butcher cleavers that I think a lot of people are familiar with, but there's also a lot of people are using Chinese vegetable cleavers, which are very tall, wide blades that are very thin. So they're the thickness of a chef's knife, but they're like 3.5 inches tall, 3.5 inches tall, sometimes taller, right? And so how do you fit that into something like that? You can't really. So when it comes to those style of cleavers, it makes sense to try to optimize the heat treatment of the steel for best performance. And sometimes what happens in those high alloy steels is that there's retained austenite even after the hardening process. So when we heat the steel up, the steel is transforming into a form called austenite. And then when we quench it, we're trying to transform it into martensite. But in that transformation, especially for high alloy steels, some of that austenite doesn't kick over. It has to go even colder, which is part of the purpose of these sub-zero treatments. And it's part of the reason why, honestly, like the people can benefit from at least two tempering cycles. A lot of people, I've heard the question a few different times over the years, you know, why do we need to temper twice? Why can't we just temper once at a really long, for a long period of time? And what's happening is in that first temper cycle in some steels, that austenite can, or that retained austenite can kick over into untempered martensite. And if you don't temper it a second time, you will then have these extra hard martensitic crystals within your iron matrix, or your steel matrix. And if you just simply put it through a second temper cycle, you help to toughen up that steel that much more. You can go through a third cycle, but you start to hit like a diminishing returns kind of quality in the steel, where not a lot really is happening in the third, but at least the first couple temper cycles make a big difference in how that steel performs.
Extra little gains. Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool. Okay, well, the next question is going to be for you, so I might as well read this one out as well. This one's from Corey Phillips. And remember, people at DMNS on Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Corey's done exactly that. He says, following up on S-grind talk, do you add in a distal taper with an S-grind? And if so, do you grind the distal taper in before the hollow, or grind the hollow to varying thicknesses like you would a normal distal taper?
Interesting. Oh, yeah. So before I do any kind of hollow or S-grind, I always flat grind my blades. So they'll, from the integral bolster, they distal taper out to the tip and down to the edge. But it's all flat ground. And then it's after it's flat ground that I start rolling in the convex geometry and then start cutting in the hollow. And so I always flatten everything first.
So I suppose if you put the S grind in first and then did the distal taper, you'd have this like fade out of the. Yeah, I can sort of see why you wouldn't do that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. Do you want to take the next one?
Yeah. Okay. This next one is from Paul Jansen. He says, when doing batches, do you have a template for each step to ensure consistency? Like one template for the shaping and one for the grinding and then another for the handles? So what would you say for that kind of stuff?
Batch work,
right?
Yeah. I've done sort of batches of sort of 200 knives the same, that kind of thing for restaurants. And generally, yeah, I will have a hardened steel template, just like a blank, basically, with, you know, without any sort of grind lines or anything like that on it, for doing your shaping. And then I will have one for handles as well. So basically, I'll make two exactly the same. But once I've made the template, I'll make another off the template. And that one, I'll just cut the handle off. So that'll be shaped the same as the scales that I'll be using. Mm. So that way I can use that as an exact template to do all my handle work without having to use another knife. But I don't have one for grinding. It depends what you mean by grinding. But for shaping, I'll just put two together as a template, draw around it and go that way. But yeah, and one for the handles as well. And that's just really handy then, because then you can do all your drill work and stuff with that template.
Sure. Yeah, when I was doing batch work, working from Bob Kramer, we did have a template for the blades. And each different model of blade, from chef's knife to paring knife and bread knife and everything between, they all had their individual templates. But there wasn't... I'm not quite sure what he means actually by... grinding either. I don't know if that means profiling or whatever. But then for the handle, when we're cutting out scales, we would do that after the bolster, the brass. Bob has brass bolsters. So we would basically use the tang of the knife at that point. It's already been profiled. It's already gone through heat treat and drilling and thinning and tapering, all that stuff. So then we would use that as the template for the handle scales. Now, in my own work, I don't really have blade templates. The blades have a tendency to come out pretty consistently similar, especially for the European style. But I don't have any blade templates. But when it comes to the handle, for me, the handle was... It was really important that the handle was really consistent. And I do have a template for the handle. But I'm always doing hidden tangs, right? So I kind of have on the outside of the block, I scribe the template for the handle. And then the first thing I do is profile the handle before I do any other shaping. And then from that point forward, I basically don't touch that profile where if it was a full tang, where the tang would be exposed to the outside of the handle, I don't touch that area until the very end, because I've had bad experiences in the past where I accidentally, because it's a hidden tang, you drill out kind of a tang slot for the tang to go into the hidden tang handle. And I've ground into that slot accidentally. So I do everything to stay off of that now until the very end. Because I don't want that to happen again. And thankfully, amazingly, I haven't had it happen really since the first time it happened. Yeah, 10 years ago.
Well,
it's been a while.
Okay.
So,
yeah. One thing I would say is if you're doing batches of a new design, make sure you complete two or three of these designs from beginning to end before you start doing your big batches. Because you can quite easily, I mean, the way I generally work is, you know, get all your profiling done, get all your drilling done on all of them, and, you know, go through each step. But if one step is wrong, all of a sudden you may have 100 knives that it's all wrong on.
Right.
So make sure you do a complete build at least two or three times of a big batch. So then you know any little, you know, little gotchas you need to watch out for.
Well, and you take do you take notes along the way, or you just go straight through the build?
Yeah, take notes. And I mean, you know, they're mental notes, really, you know. So any problems that you see or any errors that you make, you're only scrapping that one knife. You're not scrapping, you know, 100 of your profiles that you just spent the last week or so making.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Have we already talked about what kind of abrasives that we'd use if we're doing any of this blade profiling and grinding?
I mean, should we tell them?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
15%. It's a big, big saving. Big saving. Okay, this is a good question. If you want to take the next one from Ridgecraft Knives.
Yeah, sorry, I lost it. Okay, this next one says, from Ridgecraft Knives. I gave it my best shot, but there must be a better way to grind inside curves. So what do you think that means? Do you think that's like where your index finger and pinky are resting against the handle?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Yeah, sort of, you know, under you know, if you're doing it a full tang knife,
right?
The bottom of the tang, sort of under the scales, that kind of thing.
Right.
It can be quite tricky to get to. You know, your straights are obviously quite easy, but when it does get to, you know, if you've got a small radius, it can be quite difficult. And this, which is why I think you see a lot of knives and any curves you have, you'll see that they're based on an inch radius. Because that's maybe the top of their platen. They may have an inch blade, an inch roller on there.
Okay.
So I think a lot of people use that then, and you get, you know, some really nice sort of, you know, the lines are flowing in the right direction.
Right.
But if it's smaller, obviously you can use, you know, small wheel attachments and things like that.
Right.
But you can get a lot of chatter then. So you get these like little tiny lumps. It's not as smooth as it could be. It's like little lumps.
Sure.
And it can take a long time then to try and hand sand, because obviously by that point, particularly if you've got scales on, and you're doing finish work, by that time everything's hardened, and it can be quite difficult to sort of hand sand those lumps out. So I just think, yeah, it's a bit of practice. And what I tend to do is, I haven't done this in a long, long time, but I got to the point where I wasn't using small wheel attachments. I just use a flat platen and get the belt, a really flexible belt, just hanging over the platen slightly.
Oh, just hanging off the edge.
Just hanging off the edge, and then you can just get in just to clean up your work. Yeah, I found that sort of works for me. You've got to be very careful because you've got this sort of straight edge, easy to sort of dig in. But if you just take your time with a really flexible belt, you can really clean up those curves, I think.
For sure. Yeah, that is my move now, is to, especially, let's see, from like the choil to the handle, because that high heel and then the way it curves up into the handle can be tricky to get into. I don't use small contact wheels anymore. I just use the edge of the platen with the belt on there, and I just kind of carefully grind away. But I am starting at 36 grit, and so you do have to follow that eventually in the finish handle sculpting and blade grinding and stuff like that to really smooth that out. And that's where you know, slack belts really come into play. And so I make sure that it's a curve that I know the slack belt can curve around and bend into, versus it being anything too tight. And so I think that's been my move, for the last, I don't even know, like 4 or 5 years now. I've basically stopped using small contact wheels, but for a long time, I was using the small contact wheels, and I honestly usually was using the smallest one I could get a hold of, which was either like, I think it was like a half inch small contact wheel. So I was getting in there and cleaning it up, and it does, there can be some weird chatter. But for the shaping, at least the gross shaping, I would start with the small contact wheel, but then I would always finish by following with a slack belt, to get in there and follow that curve to kind of smooth things out before going to the hand sanding. Cause yeah, otherwise you're chasing these weird little chatter marks and stuff like that from the contact wheel that can happen sometimes. But it just takes time and practice to get into it. And unfortunately there aren't really a lot of, I don't think there's a lot of good content out there around using those small contact wheels for shaping and sculpting handles. And I think there's a lot of really great work can be done with them, but it does take some time and practice, and a lot of tears and mistakes can be made along
yeah,
the way.
Yeah. And I've got some rubberized small contact wheels, but even with them, I mean, you've got to really sort of slow down your belt speed as well, because those little ones are flying by the time you get your belts running around them.
It's also easier on the bearings too.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But I've never really had a good finish that way. But on the other side of things, when you're doing flats, like you know, you run up the spine, but you know, once everything's on and you're literally just cleaning up, and when you're doing flats. Mm-hmm. Conversely, I wouldn't use a flat platen then. I'd use a big wheel and do it that way, because there's just less contact then on the belt, and you always get a nice finish that way. So yeah, I think it's just getting used to the stuff you've got. I said you see so many people with those curves that are based on that, you know, that 1-inch roller. Because I think people are just being smart; they're using what they've got, you know. Right. And my first knives were exactly that way as well. But yeah, just get what you get, you know, use what you've got. But yeah, honestly, hang a belt over a platen or you know, the slack at the top of a thing. Yeah. You can really do some nice work.
Well, and that's why I love my Broadbeck, especially the deep platen that I helped design with those guys, because it helps on the slack to get into those hard to reach places, honestly. And you can work very symmetrically. Even if you're left hand dominant, what happens often is that the tool arm will get in the way. And so that deep platen helps to create some freedom from that tool arm. So you can get in there and get into those tight contours and stuff without any concern of the blade slapping, especially into the, the tool arm side. But they're a great company. The guys that run the company, Vince and Ryan, they're really great guys, and everybody they got working for them are all good dudes. I love seeing and hanging out with those guys. Whenever I do see them, Blade Show, Maker Camp, whatnot. And they're making great tools for people to use. And it's really kind of the Swiss Army knife in the shop. It's so handy to be able to change out from my flat platen to a contact wheel, to a rotary platen, to the buffing wheel attachment. They also have a disc sander attachment and a surface grinding attachment. They sell all kinds of stuff. And so if you go to broadbeckironworks.com and you type in Knife Talk 10 at checkout, you can save yourself a little bit of cash and get yourself some great tool arms or hold on machine if you don't have one yet. Again, that's broadbeckironworks.com. Knife Talk 10 at checkout to save 10%. Knife Talk 10, nice. Right? I said that right?
I believe so. Okay. I believe it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Ridgecraft knives, that's a really good question, because I see so many knives and the finish is great, but you don't really see pictures of that sort of underbelly. You know, so I think it's a bit of a flex. If you get a really nice finish there, show those pictures off and people will understand the work you've gone through, you know.
For sure.
Okay, Jacob Stout sent a question. And this is, well, Mareko, this is all for you. Okay. I'm looking at getting either a power hammer or a press in the next few months. Sure. I've seen videos of people, but it's not clear to me what the practical differences are. If you could only have one, which would you pick and why? And what are the considerations when trying to decide how powerful should I go? Is more power always better? And he said, thanks, your friend, Barry McKenna. Okay, I thought it was Jacob Stout. Did you see Jeff? He's fucked up again, hasn't he? Do you know, he makes these notes for us. That's why he shot off today's show, because he knew he'd fucked up, let's face it.
I think this is Barry McCockner.
Oh, okay, he's trying to be funny, yeah. Okay. Barry McCockner. Okay. Okay, that's filth, Jacob. Absolute filth.
Filthy. Okay. So there was actually a Blade University this year. One of the classes they offered, I think, who is it? I think it was Logan from Coal Iron, one of the engineers at Coal Iron, and Will Stelter and Salem Stroud and Charlie Ellis. I can't remember who else were part of this discussion panel about kind of like the benefits of either or hammers and presses. And it was cool to hear their the conversation. And really, I think it comes down to budget, preference, and honestly, like where you live and what kind of noise you can make. For me, I live in a very residential area. If I had to have a power hammer, or if that was my only option, let me back it up. If I had the choice of one or the other, I'd probably honestly opt for the press, because it's a lot less noise versus the power hammer. Even a small power hammer, it's shocking, but even if you had a little 25-pound power hammer, the striking from using that thing would, you'd probably be able to hear it a couple blocks over in any direction. It's surprising how much force or how well that force transfers through the ground, because really if you're on the concrete pad, you're actually kind of on an amplifier of sorts, and that distributes that force or that sound, and that carries a really long way. I have a guy that lives a couple houses down, and at 5:30 in the fucking morning, he likes to do weight training I don't know if he's doing deadlifts or whatever, but he's lifting up a bar with a lot of weight and he's dropping it down, and I can feel it in my house and hear it at 5:30 in the morning. I'm psyched for him. He's getting after it, but fucking take some fucking consideration. And honestly, you might not know. So I just got to figure out a way to either suck it up and ignore it, or gently inform him that he's being annoying. But anyways,
yeah.
So I think that presses honestly have a little bit more versatility. You can do a ton on a power hammer. You look at guys what's Jeff's buddy over in at the CMA, Pat Quinn. He forges and creates all kinds of insane shapes. He's drifting holes and hammerheads. He's doing so much work on a power hammer, and he creates all kinds of tooling to get whatever work done he needs to get done, or material movement he needs to get done. And so they can be flexible and versatile in that way, but again, they make a lot of noise, and that vibration travels throughout the ground. Presses can do a lot of the same work. It's just much slower, because if you think about the way the dies that are doing the forging work come into contact with the surface of your material, and because on a press it's just this much slower action, it is drawing heat out of the material while forging it at the same time. And the same thing does happen under a hammer to a certain extent. But it's not as dramatic. And actually, in power hammers, you can get a bit more work done per heat versus a press. But again, a press is really great, especially for residential areas. If you're going to be doing a lot of specialized tooling, if you're forging not only knives, but you're forging hammers or you're forging tongs, like you can build tooling for all of this stuff. You can build ladder dies for presses, or get some ladder dies for presses. You can do all kinds of stuff on a press. And presses aren't just necessarily for forging steel or forging blades. They're quite versatile tools. And then when it comes to the size, I think whatever size, the biggest you can afford, either for a power hammer or for a press, is what you should do. For a power hammer, I honestly don't have much use for anything much bigger than 100 pounds or 160 pounds. Which sounds like an oddly specific number, and that's because there's Anyang has a power hammer, a pneumatic hammer that's 165 pounds. But then with the press, like my press is a 25 ton, but I actually only use maybe 15 tons when I'm actually forging. I'm never really like hogging down really hard to either hot cut anything or just really smash the shit out of some material.
So I suppose you've got more control because it's not all or nothing. It's not this big hammer coming down and just smashing shit. And, you can,
Well, and then even in hammers, if you want to just focus on hammers, there's mechanical versus pneumatic. Pneumatic, which is the air-driven, has just so much more control versus a mechanical. There's some control, and it's actually surprising how much control you can have in the amount or how hard a strike is. But at the same time, like, you can't just feather down like feathering a clutch and just tap, 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 tap. Like, you could close a box of matches under a pneumatic hammer, but doing that under a mechanical hammer, did I say hamburger?
Yeah.
Hammer would be really difficult. And on a press, you know, you're controlling it the whole time. You're pressing it, pulling the lever down or pulling the lever up, or if it's foot driven, then you have that going to like a computer, like the cold irons run off a computer. So there's a lot of different options for sure. And I think for me, I do not regret getting rid of my press. In fact, here's a better question. If I had to get rid of one, I now have a power hammer and a press. If I had to get rid of one, I would easily get rid of my hammer first.
Well, that settles that.
I know, I was just like, oh, I should have thought of that from the start. Damn it. Just all that jabbering for nothing.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Okay. Where are we?
Gotcha. Is it Justin Stinson's next?
Justin Stinson, yes. Yeah. I have a question for you fellas. How would I go about shaping stone, specifically jade, in a handle? Are there any specific belts that can work, or are there any other methods? I mean, you can get the stone shape in sort of sticks, can't you? Like almost like a polishing stick, but a bit rougher. The only stone I've ever done, I used basically big, sort of like 40 grit ceramic belts. Hog off with that, and then as you would with anything else, just come down. But yeah, I don't think they're specific for stone, but they did work.
Sure.
And they just spray everything everywhere. I don't know. Have you done much with stone at all?
The closest thing I've done in the past was, I think, mammoth tooth. But really, that's petrified bone, which I think technically is a stone at that point. I'm not quite sure exactly. But it cut surprisingly easily. Which is my
and smelt surprisingly bad.
It smelled horrendous,
disgusting. So
you're just grinding bone. Anybody that's done any work with antler or anything like that, it's very, or any kind of bone, is very similar to that, stink wise. But I just use normal abrasives on it, and I was just visiting my buddy Tori. He's Gunstone Knives on Instagram. And he makes a lot of his own composites, and he had a bunch of jade that a customer sent him, and he made a composite jade scale, and he said it cut like a dream very easily. Now, I think there are different grades of jade, and so I would have to experiment with maybe some scrap pieces that I might have on the side, or a part that you're not worried about just like totally destroying, and just kind of get a feel for if your abrasives that you already have are going to cut it or not. When it comes to like ultra hard abrasives, I think silicon carbide is some of the hardest abrasives that we have available to us for blade grinding and knife grinding. So that would probably be my move if I needed anything harder than my normal abrasives. But I think I think you got to do a little bit of experimenting, buddy.
Yeah. And when it comes to sort of finishing, if you're using any sort of gemstone like that, it's all about the finish. So you're going to want to use the best hand, sandpaper by hand as you can. And that's going to be Indasa Rhinowet, of course. We'll use it. It saves you time, saves you money. And we can save you money because if you head to texasfarriersupply.com, they sell Indasa in all the grits you could possibly want. And the little tip, what you can do, it comes in sort of A4 or, pieces of paper, basically. You can just cut them into strips, get loads cut up so they're all ready to hand. Really easy to use, and it just saves you time. But yeah, head up to TexasFireSupply.com, fill up your basket with Indasa, but take a look at everything else they've got there at TexasFireSupply.com, whether you're a knife maker, a farrier, bladesmith, whatever you want to call yourself. They've got everything for everybody at TexasFireSupply.com. And when you get to checkout, use KnifeTalk10 and you'll get 10% off. So that'll be all your Indasa Rhino Wet and anything else that you get from TexasFireSupply.com.
Yes, sir. Do we want to take another one?
Yeah, we might as well. I think that's all we've got because Jeff keeps all the other items to himself and he just gives us the questions.
I got one that's been buried for a little while, so I'm going to jump down to that one. This is from NC Custom Forge. He says, "Hey guys, is there a full tang version of a museum fit up? I've seen some that leave the tang just a little proud of the scales, which is kind of the opposite of a museum fit up. Is this an aesthetic option or something done for a particular reason?" So are you familiar with the museum fit up?
Yes, yeah, where you leave a bit of sort of overhang, I suppose. Yeah, ready for... Yeah,
and usually the handle material is slightly proud of whatever, like an integral bolster or the tang of the knife. And have you seen this thing where it's the scales are just slightly undersized?
Yes, I have, yeah. I can see why you wouldn't oversize the scales, because you're just going to get gunk in there, particularly with a culinary knife. On a full tang. You just get gunk down there. But I think for comfort, I can't imagine it being good either way. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen any and I certainly haven't made any.
Sure.
But I think for comfort, I think either way wouldn't particularly be very comfortable to use.
Yeah. I've actually been surprised at how comfortable it is. It's like hardly even there. If it's done right, at least. I feel like I see some museum fit-ups that are not done right. It's too big of a step, one way or the other. But if it's very subtle, but intentional, I think it's great. I have seen it done on a full tang version. You often see this actually, though, on what are frame-handled knives, like Mike Quisenberry does that. With beautiful Damascus frame, the tang technically is separate from the blade, but it is a kind of a full tang aesthetic in the fit up and the finish of the handle. So a lot of high end Bowie knife makers make those. So like, Mike Quisenberry, Veronique Laurent, Jean-Louis Regal, Sam Lurkin, a lot of these makers, especially makers doing a frame handle, will often do a museum fit up. I've seen Don Nguyen do it in culinary knives. Actually, he's doing a hidden tang, but his frame is usually a synthetic of some sort, whether it's G10 or carbon fiber or whatever he's got going on. He has that frame in there and then the handle scales are slightly proud of it. And then when it comes to the opposite, where the handle scales are slightly undersized, the only time I've really seen that really consistently and intentionally, is in production work. And from what I understand, when it comes to production work, the knives, it's really hard to get, the blanks for the blades cut out exactly the same as the handle scales or vice versa, to get them machined out exactly the same. And
so they intentionally leave the,
instead of taking that extra, because anytime you have to do extra work to tidy things up around the profile of the handle, especially if that's the case with this kind of stuff, that's more cost that goes into making the knife. So part of the way they try to save that cost and save that time is by just slightly undersizing the handle scales, not to where it's weird and uncomfortable. So it looks intentional. It's still comfortable, but also it's not an extra step for them. They can just slap the scales on and keep running with the production. And so that's where I've seen that.
I've seen that with bolt-on scales. Yeah. A lot of, sort of hunting knives as well do a similar thing, don't they? Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, cool. I've got a good one here for you from Simple Works. Again, Simple Works on Instagram. He says, "Hey everyone, a health concerning question here. How long have you been knife making, and how's knife making affected your body long term?" He says he's turning 33 this year, and he wanted to have a heads up on what's to come. Right. So we thought he'd write to the old men to see how bent up we are.
Yeah, old fucks.
I get it. Yeah. I get it. Well, the oldest one isn't here. He needs to go to bed early. Got to change his bedpan and stuff. He'll be, by now he'll be on his third pair of pajamas where he keeps pissing himself. But Mareko, what about you?
I guess I've probably been doing it the longest on this. Well, I
probably, and I think what you do is a lot more physical as well, because you do a lot more forging.
Yeah.
So anything you do to look after your body.
Yeah. So honestly, actually, the forging part is probably the best part of the job for your body, because you're constantly moving. You're not doing a lot of kind of stagnant body posture stuff. When it comes to the grinding and handle sculpting and stuff, that's actually been the part of the job that has been the hardest on my body, because we as a human biochemical machine are designed to move. And when we spend too much time in positions, whether it's standing at the grinder or sitting at a keyboard and typing all fucking day, it's terrible for our bodies. And all this bad shit happens to it because we are meant to move. So I think I learned a long time ago, and actually my back went out in my early or mid-20s. I think it was I was like 26. My back went out on me. I was totally fucked. I couldn't stand up, sit down, lay down. I couldn't do anything without this insane pain running through my body. And thankfully that passed. But occasionally, from time to time, I do find that my body starts to stiffen up and feel really painful, to the point where I can't even like come home and cook, it's like stand and cook or stand and wash the dishes or whatever. So the thing that I found that helps me, at least, is to just do a simple morning body, like range of motion exercise. There's all kinds of different things you can do. You can do yoga, you can do Pilates. They don't have to be super complicated or long routines. There's even one that I can send you a video of. The first time I did this exercise is called Radio Taiso, which is a Japanese practice. Called radio taiso means radio exercises. So they were these like audibly instructed exercises that they would play over the radio that people would do at the beginning of the day and maybe at the afternoon at like lunch break. It takes like 3.5 minutes to do. And literally, even doing this very silly range of motion routine makes a fucking massive, huge difference in how my body feels throughout the rest of the day. And I'm so dumb, because I'm like, I do it a few times. I'm like, oh, my body feels great. And then I stop doing it. And then my body feels like shit again. Time. And I vacillate. I have this like up and down about how my body feels. And it's like, it's only 3.5 minutes. I need to just stop and do it every day, at least once a day, in the morning when I first get to the shop, or at lunch sometime during the day, to help get that motion back into the body. Because again, like a lot of people, especially because I'm a forger, they're like, oh, it must be great, you're forging all the time. I'm like, I'm forging like 2% of the time. The rest of the time is grind time or standing at the drill press. And especially if you're doing batch work like you do, even standing at the drill press and the little bit of motion, like with your head or your chin tucked down to your chest, constantly looking down, like it's terrible for your body. It's horrible. So doing things that you, finding things to do, even simple stretches, like putting your fists up next to your head, kind of like you're flexing, like a bodybuilder flex, and then kind of pulling your elbows back and arching your spine backwards and looking up to the sky, that even changes that posture. Essentially, it's the opposite of the curled over, holding a piece of steel, grinding posture that we have. And breaking that up every once in a while, doing something like that, makes a huge difference. Again, those morning routines of range of motion exercises, doing arm circles and twists at the hip and like reaching down to your toes, like even if you do a few sets of those, it's going to make such a difference in your day and your body. Like I said, no matter what whether you're grinding blades or you're working at a desk or whatever the hell, you're washing dishes in a restaurant, it's going to make a huge difference, because our bodies are meant to move and not stand at a grinder for hours on end.
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely terrible for your body.
Yeah. What I did when I first started, sort of, you know, I'd spend a lot of time to grind at that kind of thing. I simply set my grinder on like an old tabletop, you know? And I was, posture. I was just hunched over, just really, really hunched over. And I'd get pains in my neck and all the rest of it. But then I just sort of welded up a little, you know, a little table basically for it. So everything was at, and you need to be really careful with this, especially for drill presses and things like this. So I put everything on these little stands. But I put drill press where the tool rest is on a drill press, for example, just under eye height.
I gotcha.
So it's much higher than you'd imagine. So what happens then? You're not hunching, you're not bent down. Mm-hmm. You can see the light between a tool and the piece that you're working on, so you can see exactly when you're hitting. You're not guessing like you normally would be. But obviously you need to be really careful, especially with a radial tool like a drill press, because if something does go flying, it's right there in your face. So you need to be really careful that you're clamping things down, that kind of thing. But I found personally that really helped with my neck and my shoulders, particularly if I'm doing, you know, 3 weeks of work on a drill press or 3 weeks on a grinder. Again, I got my grinder much higher than most other people would have. Just for that reason. And I think we're all aware, if we sit at a computer and type, we all know that our elbows should be straight and, you know, our arms should be straight off there. So we're all aware of, you know, good posture. But I think when it comes to maybe a workshop, people aren't maybe so much aware of that, and they just, you know, they'll just plop something onto a workbench and start using it that way. It's just a bit of thought, I think, really.
Well, don't you know if you're working in a shop, you're a tough, manly man, and you don't have to do anything like Pilates.
Exactly.
Your body ready.
You wear a vest and flip-flops and you don't give a shit. Yeah.
No, just shirtless, no shoes, a kilt.
Shirtless,
no eye protection, nothing.
Kilt.
Utility kilt.
Yeah. Yeah, using an angle grinder on the floor so you get those sparks right up the kilt onto the nuts. That's exactly what you want to be doing. Yeah,
For sure. Do we want to do another one?
We might as well just carry on.
This next one is from Kyle Furlman. What the fuck? How do you say that?
Furlman. Yeah. I think it's German. He looks German to me.
Kyle Furlman. Okay. Sorry, Kyle. It says, do you guys have any tips for knife tip geometry and not grinding too thin? So it sounds like he's having issues with the tip getting just a little too thin. Maybe even possibly burning it up.
I do, and it's not a tip of mine, but it's something that I've seen other people do. So basically what's happening, as Mareko's aware, there's very little mass there, particularly if you've got a distal taper. By the time you get to the tip, there's very little mass, really easy to overheat that tip. And, you know, I've done plenty in the past where the tip will go blue or something, completely ruin the heat treat. Actually, Don Wynn, we've already mentioned in the show, I've seen what he's done where he leaves like a bit more mass at the tip, like a big, like almost like a ball end to the tip. So when he's grinding, there's just that bit, like a bell. Okay, bit like the bell end of the tip. Okay, on his bell end, he'll generally grind, and because there's more mass there, you're less likely for it to burn out. And all he'll do then is once he's got to the distal taper up to that fine tip, he can just grind off that sort of bell. And smooth out his bell end. So I think that's a really good tip for that.
Yeah.
I haven't got any other tips really, apart from just taking your time and going really slow.
Yeah.
What I've seen a lot of people do as well, particularly when they start, is they'll go left and right they're using a flat platen, for example, left and right across. And what you've got to consider then is those crossover points where you're changing from left to right, they're being grinded twice as much as what's been ground in the middle.
Sure.
So obviously that would particularly, you know, make a huge difference when you get on the tip. So always go one way, particularly when you come to those finish grinds. And if you're hogging off, I quite often will just go left, right, you know, but before you get to that finish work, just take it one way. But that bell end tip is a, is a really good one from Don.
It is a great tip. But yeah, because that, like you said, that thermal mass, it really helps to beef it up so it doesn't overheat so easily, or so it doesn't get washed out actually so easily as well. Because if, and often I don't do kind of the extra mass at the tip. I just have a sharp point, and I have definitely washed that out multiple times in the past on just, actually, I'm trying to think. I feel like I was doing a knife recently and that happened on it, which is really fucking annoying. But I think I eventually got there. But it's just, yeah, you got to take your time and also kind of be a very conscientious. I used to do, and actually still, like you were saying, when you're hogging away excess material, then maybe you do the whole slide to slide and then flip the blade across and then side to side and you're just hogging. But in the finish grinding, I found that I need to slow down just a little bit and be a little bit more conscientious about how evenly I'm grinding across the blade or down the length of the blade on one particular side, and making sure that when I'm out at the tip or even actually back at the heel, I've had the back of the heel of the knife wash out on me because I wasn't paying attention to what was going on back there. And that often happens when the heel or that sharp point, whether it's the heel or the tip, comes in too far from the edge of the belt. Obviously, it has to be over the belt to be abraded, but especially if it's like if I'm doing a convex grind on a rotary platen, it's a soft backing, and that soft backing will conform a little bit. And if you bring that tip in, say, to the center of that soft backing, it's going to conform or convex around it, not just vertically in the direction the belt's moving, but also from edge to edge, from left to right. And that it will cause that point to wash out, and that does the same thing at the heel. So I'm very careful at those points to slow down the machine and pay very close attention to both the tip and the heel when I'm grinding them. And then when I'm done grinding them, I don't grind them again unless I'm really paying attention. And usually, you know, obviously, as I'm going through my belt progressions, each time I go to a higher grit, I have to stop and slow down just a little bit just so I can focus on that area and not fuck it up, because I don't want to get that far just to make a stupid mistake like that that I've actually made, honestly, so many times that it's changed the way that I have to grind, because otherwise I'm just mindlessly grinding material away. So that would be my suggestion. And also at the same time, on chef's knives, a general purpose chef's knife, and honestly even on a little paring knife, the tip actually doesn't have to be that thin. A lot of people like the idea of a super thin tip, but it doesn't have to be like foil thin. You know, you do want it thin, but there still has to be enough material there so that it's stable enough that if you accidentally dink it into something the tip's not just going to roll over. You still want some thickness and stability there so that it can accidentally dink into something and it's not going to just fuck up that point. I see it both commercially manufactured and handmade knives where the tip is just taken way too thin, and it's not necessary. It really just isn't.
Yeah.
So I actually have a tendency to keep the tip and the heel just a little bit thicker than the real estate in between, because where I want the blade to actually be super thin, especially a chef's knife to be super thin, is in that central area, that central, say like 60 or 75%. Because that's where the food is going to be in contact with it the most. And then just a little bit more thickness, and I'm not talking a lot, like, but just a little bit more out at the tip and back of the heel, just for that little extra stability, for general use. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Well, to take a look down the list, and find one you want to do. Okay. I've got one here, and then we could call it a day. Sounds maybe. Good. So I've got one here from Ronald Handmade, and he says, I'm a couple of weeks behind on listening, so no feedback this week. I'm just sitting here with my arm in a sling, recovering from shoulder surgery. I've been watching maker videos on YouTube and thinking about the projects I want to work on when I'm back in the shop. It's going to be a long couple of months. Anyone have any suggestions for projects I can do with just one non-dominant hand? It's a difficult one in the shop, but I'd say use this time to sort of skill up on things. What I think is really when people come to sort of sell their stuff, I think photography is so important. And I think like just maybe you know, do a few little online courses, things like that, because that'll make your whatever you do make so much more saleable. Use that to sort of educate yourself and maybe do some courses on a few different things. So you're not directly making as such. But by the time it does come, you know, you're healed up and you can get back in the shop, you can make what you want to make. What you're making is going to be so much better. And, you know, particularly with, you know, photography, for example, it would just be so much more saleable for you as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I can understand the desire to get back in the shop and be productive. Especially, but because it's your non-dominant hand and you're only working single-handedly, the chances of making a mistake that either can hurt your other part of your body or a tool or whatever work you're working on.
Or delay your recovery
goes up. And I just don't think it's worth it. And so I think what you suggested actually really does make sense. I think it's also a great opportunity to spend some time on social media in a productive way. So that's like, I don't know what type of knives you make, but starting to try to develop relationships, interacting with people that are in those different communities, or even just people who've commented on your stuff in the past and starting to develop those relationships, not even necessarily on social media, but maybe in forums or somewhere. To kind of grow that sense of community, not only for yourself, but for people to also see you as part of that community, and either potentially a resource or reference to different ways of doing things, or information. But yeah, it is pretty hard to try to figure out what to do in the shop single-handedly. I mean, you could go fucking clean, I guess. get turn the vacuum on and just kind of hoover around the shop, or not really going to do much sweeping, but you can kind of like pick things up and put things away if that's an issue for you. I know in my shop that's an issue, so if I was only one hand, and that's exactly what I'd have to be doing, is just cleaning in the shop. But that's what I got for that.
Yeah, take advantage of the enforced sort of downtime and, do non-making stuff, but that will make you a better maker, I think. Yeah, there's plenty of options there. One thing you can do is head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com. They've got everything you need. You know that. Lawrence is a good dude. He's one of our friends here. He sells everything you need. It's the one-stop shop for knife makers. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and much, much, much more. He's also the Canadian distributor for Combat Abrasives. Also sells Rhino-Wet. Basically, anything that we mention on the show, Lawrence has got it in stock. Belts are 10% off if you buy 10 or more as well. So there's always a deal to be done. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Go take a look. They're also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram.
Yep.
What have you got? Have you had a look down the list?
We got one here from Bayard Knives. It says, questions and feedback. He says, hey, gents, what's your everyday carry knife / tool? Or are you often found without a knife? Thanks for always being authentic, sharing your knowledge and experiences both in and out of the shop. Aaron. Okay, so, tool. Do you carry a knife on you? Sorry, Craig. I didn't mean to call you a tool.
I mean, did you call me a tool? Hey, tool. I'm in Europe, so it's very difficult to carry a knife.
That's fair.
You can carry something. I think 2 inches is the legal limit now. I don't. The only time I'm out with any sort of knives are during the summer now, but everybody has these street events. Everybody goes out to eat and things like that. So I normally just take a bunch of like Opinels with me, folding Opinels, because they're easy. I don't carry a knife day to day. Okay. Just because it's a bit of a risk. Unfortunately,
do you carry the Opinel to defend yourself, or is that for like your steak? Oh, it's a picnic knife.
Oh no, they're very. There's a bunch of pensioners cooking steaks, basically. Okay. So it's for food.
I just had this image of like everybody hanging out at summertime and starting all these knife fights happening, and you feeling like you had to defend yourself.
I think particularly. I've just spent 4 or 5 weeks back in the UK.
Oh yeah.
And there's been a number of incidents there with knives, and it's a real sort of hot topic at the moment. Sure. And it's just not worth the fire, really. Yeah.
You know how you fix a knife problem? You give everybody guns. Just joking.
Said the American.
I mean, I'm telling you, I think if somebody's not going to attack you with a knife if they think they might get fucking shot. But I'm just
Jesus Christ.
I think I usually have a folding knife of some sort. I don't have a particular brand that I carry. What I'm carrying is something that was given to me for free, either as a birthday gift or Christmas stocking stuffer, or like some when you go down to the Eugene show in Eugene, Oregon. They give you, as a table holder, they give you a knife, a Spyderco knife. And so every year it's something different, but it's just like free, kind of very inexpensive thing. But most of the time I'm only using knives to either scrape metal or to open boxes. And I'm hardly ever using knives to cut stuff. I do wish that I had like a multi-tool, like a Leatherman or something, just a simple little Leatherman, just because those are super handy. And I do find myself from time to time wishing I had like a little flathead screwdriver or Phillips or whatever. Not the tiny saw. The fucking tiny saw is worthless. But
Would
you like those a 1.5 inch saw? No.
Yeah. That they're not sharp at all. They've got these wavy sorts. Yeah, they're no good at all. No good.
All right. I think we did it.
I think with that, we can call it a day. I mean, it's far easier to do the show without Jeff, let's face it. You know, it's a much more civilized affair. There's no butting in. There's no dick jokes. So if you could all... basically, Jeff answers the Knife Talk podcast Instagram. They all go to him. So you can all just make a note of just how great the show has been.
Jesus fucking Christ. I think he's the only one with access to the podcast Instagram anymore. He's just going to go on strike and we're not going to have anything.
He probably will, yeah. Just wind it up. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate you listening. Remember, every Monday morning, Knife Talk podcast will be hitting wherever you listen to your podcasts. So thank you very much. Bye-bye for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.